Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
Hello, everyone. I am so happy today. I get to talk to an amazing woman named Lindsay Junk, who is the president of Yoga 6, based in California. But it's not so boutique. It's actually quite large. And we're going to talk about her background as a leader, compassionate leadership, and all about yoga and Yoga 6. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's so great to have you. And we share a background in yoga. I've been a practitioner for a long time. I'm a certified yoga teacher, although I found that I like taking classes more than teaching them. And I'm just curious, Lindsay, as a start, like, can you tell us your yoga story, like how you found yoga, and as a practitioner, what your yoga story is?
I'm glad you asked that question, but it's not going to be your usual answer. But so I have always been an athlete and in the fitness industry my whole life. And when I transitioned from working in a health club environment into yoga, it was really by mistake. A friend of mine said that they needed help with a company and asked me to come and help with a company called YogaWorks. And I said, sure, I'll do it. But you know what? I've never taken a yoga class. So before I say yes, let me at least like see what this is. And I'd always been thinking, I always thought yoga wouldn't be for me. I'm just a kind of a fast paced, got to get my workout in kind of person. And so the first class I took, I actually got kicked out of. I went in and I was there just to kind of, nobody knew who I was or that I was going to be working for the company. And I went in and I had gone for a long run before because I wanted to make sure I got my workout in, showed up to yoga. And it was a very strict teacher, very busy, busy class. Went in there and I got a calf cramp halfway through. And so I had to walk out and get some water. And then I started like kind of not following the class. I was doing different because I was hurting. And the teacher came up to me and said, hey, just, you know what, this class isn't for you. You're distracting everybody. Please leave. So I was like, oh, okay. That's not okay. And then, you know, because that probably would have been it. But then because I was working for the company, decided, okay, I'm going to keep taking class. So long story short, fast forward, I fell in love with it, but it was a not love at first sight kind of situation. It took me a while to get to the point where I could calm down enough to take a whole class and to really like to be okay with moving slower and not thinking about anything but what I was doing, being intentional, learning to breathe. All of that took me a couple months before I could really like it. And then I just started to realize the benefits and how it affected me mentally. And at the time, this was years ago, right? Like I have 15-year-old daughters now, they're twins, and a 14-year-old son. I just had my son. And so that was 14 years ago. And it was just, it helped me be a better parent. It helped me with being more calm, more understanding. And then from there, you know, I probably for the first year, I kind of had to force myself to take class. But after that, it was something that I had to do to clear my mind and actually to get my body ready to be able to exercise again after having kids and getting older. And now it's just a part of my routine. But I had to really work on it.
Yeah, I love that story. And I think a lot of people, our listeners, just so you know, not all teachers are strict, but some are. And I think it's great to take a lot of different classes with a lot of teachers to find your teacher.
And you're right.
You know, and I don't give up on yoga. I say, don't give up on yoga until you have been to five classes with five different teachers.
For sure. And I think you're right. Like, I'm glad you said not all teachers are that strict, because I just ended up landing in probably one of the more stricter classes that exist in the world of yoga. And it was definitely for people that had an advanced practice and had been, you know, going to yoga for a while. So it didn't fit for me. And I don't want people to think that that's the case.
But as a yoga practitioner, I also appreciate the lineage and the strictness in some of the classes where I didn't when I was younger.
Yeah.
You know, because I think I've grown to appreciate rules and boundaries and clarity. So I would also say that in yoga, as in life, you will like different things at different points of your practice.
You are spot on there. That is true. Yep. Yeah.
So tell us your business history, how you ended up in a leadership position at a yoga company.
Yeah, it's again, one of those things that wasn't planned, but it all worked out. And I tell this to my kids now because they're at the age where they're starting to think about what they're going to do when they grow up. And they're like, well, how did you do it? I'm like, I don't know. I just went where it felt right. And landed here, but I'm thrilled that I'm here. So I started off as a college athlete, running track and field and cross country. And I had a degree in biochemistry, so not really related at all to business. But it turns out I'm Canadian, and I was taking classes in the United States. And I was done with my degree, ready to go back to Canada. I didn't want to go back. I wanted to stay. I was actually in school in Hawaii, so of course I didn't want to go back. And I had, as a foreigner, you have a year to study but you have to kind of study in your field. And so somehow I was able to take biochemistry and say that it worked in the fitness industry. And so I got a job working in a gym, actually, and it was called Gold's Gym. I'm sure people that are listening have heard of that. But it's back like in the early, not in the 90s, which was kind of the heyday of the big box fitness industry. And I started in a job as a nutrition tech, which is a person that when you sign up for a membership, you got like a full package of being able to learn about eating and nutrition. And so they came to see me as a part of their membership. So I did that for a couple of years and I loved it. I loved helping people and I loved helping them learn about how to eat and how to exercise and how to do it in a way that they could be consistent. And I ended up being pretty good at it. And so I got promoted into the lead, I think it was called the fitness manager at the time. And so that was kind of like the beginning of my leadership journey. And I didn't think that I would be, I never set out to be a leader. I just, again, like landed in it, but back then, and I think it still is the case a little bit now, but people will get promoted into leadership positions because they were good at their job, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're a good leader. And so that was, you know, I ended up, I guess I was a pretty good leader. I was a captain of my team in sports and very enthusiastic. And so I ended up being pretty good at the job. And then from there, because I'm a competitive person, not because I said I want to be a president or a CEO, it was just, I want to grow up the ladder. I looked at what was the next job and what was the next job and the next job. And I was really goal oriented and I kept kind of growing. And so I went from being a fitness manager to a general manager, to a district manager, to a vice president, switched into another company, did the same kind of journey there. And then I landed at a company called Yoga Works. And that was actually the first time that I just wasn't working for a big company. It was a smaller company and my job was to help it grow. And that's probably where I learned the most about being a good leader. I worked with a gentleman named Phil Swain who taught me a lot. You probably know him actually, Laurel, just because he was you were part of Yoga Works and he was around a lot. And I was there for 8 years and learned about how to lead and how to help people grow. And then that company got bought by a private equity company. And that was kind of my signal to leave and to move on to something else. And I ended up doing a little bit of work on my own, doing some consulting in leadership and in the fitness industry. And then from there, I was lucky enough to meet Anthony Geisler, who is the founder of Exponential Fitness. And he explained to me his plan for having multiple brands under one roof. And he said he really wanted a yoga brand. And I was super excited about that because I realized when I was working with Yoga Works, how many people were very, very interested in opening up their own yoga studio, but didn't know how to do it and wanted to do it through franchising. And so I would feel these calls all the time and they would always be from really random places like Minnesota or like Vermont, just places where you wouldn't normally see yoga. And so I was excited to take on the position at Yoga 6 to be able to help grow the brand across the country. And I knew that it would do well. And it did. We're, you know, now here we are 5 years into the journey at Yoga 6, and we have close to 200 locations open, not in the super sexy parts of the country where yoga usually is. And we do have them in those places, but we have them in smaller towns, in places where there isn't a lot of yoga, and we're able to get yoga to more people, which is basically our mission.
Well, I'm 2.5 hours, I think, from the nearest studio, which is in Wilmette, Illinois.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. So you're probably experiencing.
I thought I need to go to a Yoga 6 class, but it's a bit of a commute. Yeah, so far.
So far. We'll work on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm in a tiny town called Douglas, Michigan. So I'm really curious, Lindsay. So in our yoga journeys that have crossed paths, I travel a lot for family and work. And so I was a big Yoga Works, you know, and I was so sad when they closed the studios that I was going to. And I was also a big client at Yoga Yoga in Austin, which has also gone away. So yeah. Can you speak to where you see yoga as a business from your perspective and where we're headed?
That's a good question. So I think we... At Yoga 6, our journey is to make yoga more accessible and to make it so that it's not so intimidating. Like I told you my story of my very first class. And so some of that experience is why I want us to go in that direction. And so I think as we, you know, part of what maybe Yoga Works and some of the other yoga companies haven't been successful is they're not as consistent of a product. So if you took, like, I remember when I was with Yoga Works, I would take a class in Santa Monica, maybe a level 2 class, and I could do it. I was never a really strong practitioner, but I could do it. And then maybe I would go to New York and take the same class and I couldn't do half of the poses. And so I think that like the inconsistency as those companies grew made it really difficult for the customer to know what they were going to get. So I think that's part of why they weren't successful. And so with Yoga 6, our goal is to make it so that anybody can take any class. You could be a very, very advanced practitioner, somebody that's, you know, been practicing forever, gone to India, teacher, or you could be somebody just off the couch that has not done any yoga, doesn't know any Sanskrit, and just walking into class. And our goal is that the way we teach, the language formula, it allows for anyone to take the class, and everybody kind of gets their own. You get your own thing out of it, right? Like you could get into handstand, or you could just be like, you know, in forward fold. So I think the focus now is to have it accessible to everyone, allow more people to take it, have people feel good about themselves when they come out of class, take away the mystery around the practice, and just and make it so that there's more locations that have consistent classes across the country. With 200 locations, we have 6 different styles of classes, and you know what you're going to get in every single class.
That's amazing. I remember being, as a yoga teacher, my biggest fear was learning Sanskrit and saying the poses in Sanskrit. And yeah. The first day I arrived at teacher training, the teachers who actually came from Kripalu and were very traditional had a, you know, made a decision to do everything in English and all poses in English. So when you say language formula, are you talking all poses in English? How do you make it accessible?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yes, all poses in English. We try to stay away from Sanskrit only because it becomes a barrier to entry for your average person. And then the way our teachers are taught to teach is to talk people into the pose versus yelling out the name of the pose. So you may not hear Downward Dog or Warrior Two in a class. You might just have listening to the teacher explain to you how to get into that pose. So that's helpful if you're someone that hasn't taken yoga. Even the English word for most of the poses people don't know, right?
Right.
So that allows somebody like me back, you know, 15 years ago taking class to be like, okay, I can do this. I understand what they're saying. Bend my knee, make sure my knee's lined over my toes, put my arm out. That's Warrior Two. And so I do remember, you know, back when I first started thinking, when do they teach you the names of these poses? And how do I learn what they are? And there wasn't. We actually ended up making a class called Yoga 101 for that reason, because I was like, how am somebody that's never taken yoga, how are we going to learn this? And so we created the class, which was helpful, but we don't want everybody to have to go in and take a 101 class. You've got people that are really good athletes wanting to take classes and they want to move their bodies and they can, they just don't know the names of the poses. So the way that we teach at Yoga 6 is you don't have to just come in, you'll figure, you know, we're going to talk you through it. Sometimes the teachers will say the name of the pose. Sometimes they won't.
Right. So talk to me about the franchise model or the business model, because that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I was new to franchising too when I started with Yoga 6 5 years ago. And so the way this works is we have people that come in and buy territories or buy franchises. And usually they're buying between 1 and 3. And basically they're buying the rights to be able to open a Yoga 6. And we basically say, here's the playbook. We hand them the instructions on exactly how to do it, which is great, because a lot of people coming in that are interested in opening a yoga franchise don't know anything about yoga. They love it. Like how you said, oh, I love taking classes. I love the way it makes me feel. So we will give them the recipe essentially on how to hire a teacher, we'll train the teachers for them. Or sometimes people come in and say, I've got a background in yoga. I am a yoga teacher. I love it. I want to make this my business, but I have no business background. So we will give them the formula for that. Which is, you know, how to hire a general manager, how to train them, how to teach them on sales, that sort of thing. And so essentially the way a franchise model works is you pay, the franchisee pays a royalty to the franchisor to be able to operate under its name and then its systems and its processes.
And how much does it cost to start a franchise? If I was going to start one in Michigan and I decided to do one studio, because there's
one studio here. it would depend. There's a lot of different factors that can go into that based on the build of the studio and where you're deciding to open and what the building was like before. But I'd say anywhere between 350 and just under 500,000 to get it started. And that's it with everything, like the territory fee, the build, the labor and the marketing to get the members, that the entire packet.
And then you have a model that is proven, and then you have some marketing support. And when you train teachers, do you bring them to California? How does that work?
So that, we don't, we actually do it over Zoom, believe it or not. So when we started, we had our master instructors fly out to different markets and train in person. The challenge we had was that most of the studios weren't built when we were training them, meaning that the studios were still under construction. And so our franchisees would have to go and find other spaces to be able to host the training, which was an additional expense. And so when COVID happened, we didn't want to stop opening studios, but we couldn't travel. So we started it over Zoom and realized the retention rate was better than when we did it in person. I think because you're kind of stuck staring at a screen, you just have to focus.
Zone out, really. Yeah. And if you have a really good master teacher, they're looking at you.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah, and it also causes people to be more prepared when they show up for their meetings. And we ended up taking a lot of the training that we had that we required to do in person and said, you do this on your own. And then when you come to the meeting, be ready. So it's more efficient that way. And people are just as happy and they're still connecting with each other, which is awesome. So saves our franchisees money and time. And we can get more people through training.
Wonderful. And when you talk about accessibility, are you also talking about age and body type and things like that?
Yes, absolutely. So if you go into one of our classes, you will find everyone. And I'll give you a good example. I talk about my daughters and my son, but a couple of years ago, actually not, like it was more than a couple, 5 years ago, 3 years, or anyways, my daughters were 12. And my mom, who is in her 80s, came to visit. And she was like, what are you doing? Like, can you show me what you're doing? So I said, well, why don't we go take a class? The Yoga 6 in Redondo Beach had just opened. And so my daughters, myself, my mom, all of us went. And so my girls are very athletic, but at the time they were just kind of, you know, like little puppies. They didn't have very good balance and they hadn't done yoga before. My mom has health issues and is, like I said, in her 80s. So she was where she was. And then me, the time I was in my 40s. And so we all took class together at all, you know, obviously all different ages. And then you'll see people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, you know, different races, different, definitely different body types. So when I first started yoga, 15 years ago, most of the people in class were very fit and looked really similar. And now, especially with Yoga 6, we're seeing different styles of bodies and different levels of fitness. Not everybody looks the same. And I think that's great. You know, when I first started yoga, when I tell you, I had just had my son. So I think I gained 80 pounds. I was, you know, very, very, I was close to 200 pounds after I had him. And so I was just trying to get back in shape. And I felt really uncomfortable in the class. But I wouldn't feel uncomfortable in Yoga 6 class just because we've got everybody in there.
And I also think that goes back to the lineage. In India, everyone does yoga, right?
Yeah. Like,
you know, and somehow we made it a fitness thing here. And I'm so happy to see diversity of body types, diversity of races, diversity of ages. It kind of brings it back to its roots in a way.
And it's so interesting you say that, because we have, as we've been going through and getting new franchisees, I get a lot of franchisees that have origins from India and that they grew up there. And they're always so excited when they come in. They're like, this is perfect. This is what we did back in India. Now I can do this in my little town in Michigan or, you know, wherever. They're very excited to be able to offer that into the, in their communities. And, talk a lot about how they did yoga in school, and that was just part of their growing up there, and how it's so different here. And they're happy that we were able to do that, with Yoga 6.
Well, I'm very excited about taking a class at Yoga 6. I'm gonna, as I travel. Do you have any studios in Austin?
Yes, okay. We have two studios because in Austin.
My niece and I have been taking yoga classes together since she was 3, and she's 14 now. And we haven't found our studio since Yoga closed. So now we have a studio.
We have two. So I'll offline, I'll shoot you the addresses.
We used to go to a children's class. I would go to the adult class and she would go to the children's class, and they would have music and guitar play. I mean, it's Austin, right? So
yeah.
It was very music, yoga. It was really fun. So I'm so excited. We'll be going to Yoga 6 in Austin. So let's thank you for all that, and so excited to support you and your company. So let's just go back to my lane, which is compassionate leadership. So the way that I define compassionate leadership is using your head and heart to inspire and influence people. And earlier, before we started recording, we talked about how we both have evolved in our leadership style. So I'm curious for you to just tell the short story of what you were like when you started leading and what you are like now.
Okay. So when I started leading, it was before I'd had kids. And I was very competitive. And so I thought leading was just telling people what to do. You do this. And because I'm the leader, you have to follow what I say. And if you don't, then I'll just find somebody else that will. And that's kind of how I started, which is embarrassing to say. I just think back and I'm like, oh my gosh, the poor people that had to work with me then.
Yeah, but my compassion for you, your models were coaches, and that's basically what they do, right?
You're right. They were definitely in that. I mean, I was like, I had some really good coaches, but that's sort of what I saw as I was growing up, and not from coaches, but even just with the people I worked with, that's how I was led. And so I started there, and then I got older. I couldn't always do what I was telling everybody else to do. So in the beginning, I had no kids. I could work from whatever 6 in the morning till super late at night. I rarely got sick. I didn't have to take off for doctor's appointments. And then the twins came, and that all changed. And I started, you know, they were up all the time. I was starting to get sick. I had to get home. And so then I started to realize, oh, wow, like people can't work all this time. And then I started to just understand that there's got to be a way to be successful without, you know, pounding yourself every single day. And I started to evolve. And then, fast forward 15 years, the first thing I learned was that it's not always the amount of time that you spend working. It's very being targeted and very specific and intentional, which is part of yoga. And so that was a big one for me. So meaning you don't have to work all the time, but when you're working, it should be specific and intentional. The other one was, you know, meeting people where they're at. And some people come in and they're maybe nervous about certain parts of their job. You know, like what we do now, what I'm doing now with Yoga 6, we do a lot of presenting. There's a lot of talking in front of people, Zoom calls, meetings on stage. Some of our, some of the team is super comfortable there. Some of them aren't. And so helping people get comfortable with their positions. I think another thing that I've learned over time is that as a leader, not everybody's motivated. Not everybody is motivated the same way. And when I first started, I thought, oh, everybody's motivated like me. They all want to just keep getting promoted and getting to the next step and, you know, getting to the next level. And then as I got a little older, I thought everybody was maybe motivated by money. That is not the case. People are motivated by very different things. And so learning what motivates the team has been really helpful for me. So not everybody is motivated the same. Not everybody wants to get to the next level or make a ton of money. We're all motivated differently. Like for me, when I first started, I was motivated by getting promoted and recognition. And then as I went along, I was a little bit more about money. Now it's about helping people and helping people reach their goals and then feeling like I'm making an impact and doing good work and feeling valued. But that's been an evolution. And so as I've learned that, it's been easier to lead people because I notice, especially now with the different ages of people that we're working with, some of the kids that are coming in that are part of my team are not motivated the way that I was motivated. And I just had a conversation with one of them and I said, what motivates you? Like what makes you excited? And she said, just feeling like I'm part of the group and feeling like I'm doing a good job and feeling like I have stability. I don't think I would have heard that answer 10 years ago, or maybe I wouldn't have listened for it, but, it's been an interesting journey learning that. And then, now that I've kind of figured that out, it's been a lot easier to lead. But when you learn that, so in the early days, I had a bunch of people who were all the same as me. This big group of people were all the same, super type A, let's win, charge, go. And then as I've grown, I'm realizing like I don't really need a whole bunch of me's on the team. I need people to do different roles. And so I have a very different eclectic group that I get to work with now, and which is great because we all will look at a problem and we'll all try to solve it differently. And that's what you need, right? When you have a big problem, you don't want a bunch of people to say, okay, let's do A, B, C, D. You want it to be, let's do A, Z, Q, R, like all over the place. And with all of that, you'll come up with your answer. So that's been, you know, something that I've been working on the last couple of years. It's been fun.
There's also a business case for diversity on your team. I heard from a professor from Stanford a couple of weeks ago, and she talked about there's a 30% increase in profitability if you have different ages, different genders, different opinions, different people motivated by different things. All those things mm-hmm. actually create a better bottom line because it reflects, especially if you have a company like yours where you want to attract diverse clients, right? So having a diverse leadership team is going to help you anticipate what your clients want in the long term.
Yeah. And I think too, like as I'm hiring, I know what I'm always solving, you know, as a leader, you're always solving problems, right? And so when I'm hiring people, I'm looking for people that can help me solve certain problems. And when you do that, you actually end up like, I don't go out there and say, I need this type of person, they need to look like this, be this age, be this gender, be this nationality, ethnicity. I'm looking for a problem solver. And they all, when you get the right group, they're all going to end up coming in looking different, which is awesome. Sometimes it makes for very spirited meetings though, when we are all coming at things from a different perspective. But I think everybody enjoys working with people that have a different point of view.
Yeah. Someone told me a long time ago that very talented people are harder to manage because they do have opinions, but the result is better. As a leader, you have to develop listening skills, patience skills, all sorts of different skill set when you're working with people like yourself, you may not need.
Right. You're 100% right. It's so easy if you just have a bunch of people that are just like you, but how boring. So one of the things I always tell my team is like, don't just tell me yes, because I'm the boss, right? It really bothers me when they do that. I can tell when they're doing it because they won't look in my, because I get very passionate. So I'll have an idea. I'm like, okay, we're going to do this. And I'm so excited about it usually. And then I think it's hard for them to tell me no. But I can tell by looking at them.
Like, you
yeah, you don't think this is a good idea, do you? And oh no, it's a good idea. You don't. I can tell by looking at them. Because I think that's the other thing as leaders, you generally need to get to know your people. Yeah. And if you know the people that you're working with, then you can tell when they're just telling you yes because you're the boss, versus either telling you yes because it's a good idea, or they're saying your idea is not good. Let me give you my idea. So that's been one thing that lately, that's been kind of the thing I've been fixated on, is don't tell me yes because I'm in charge, because I'm really not in charge. You are. You tell me. And that we've been doing much better when I don't get to make decisions and they do.
Yeah.
Especially because they're usually close to the problem. Yeah.
Your team. I want to circle back to your good question as a tip for our listeners. I think your question, what motivates you, is such a good question to ask people in interviews, and touch base with your team on that question, because like, different life stages, what motivates you is different, right? Like, so for a working mom of little people, you know, being flexible and being able to go to their school plays might motivate them more than other things, right? So I love that question that you brought up. Lindsay, as we wrap up here, any other tips for maybe people thinking about being more compassionate in their leadership style? Or any tips you want to share with other leaders that may help them?
You don't always have to be right. You can change your mind. Be nice to yourself too, not just your team. I think that's important. I think a lot of times people think, I'm the boss now. I need to be perfect. I need to have the answers. I need to know in advance what we're going to do. But that's not your job. Your job is to get there. And to use your resources. So if it's your team is part of your resource, and your job is to get the most out of them. And by like taking a breath and just being calm and creating an environment that lets them flourish is going to be the best way to get the most out of your team.
I also believe that meditative practices like yoga can help you be a better leader. You know, so if you haven't tried yoga, my tip would be give it a try, because I do believe that it can help you be a better leader.
Yes, it certainly can. Just having a little bit more grace with yourself and with the people that you're working with, and just makes you more nice to be around. Yeah. And that's another thing too, right? Like, I think as a leader, if you can create an environment where people are okay, they know that it's okay to fail and it's okay to try something new, or maybe say something in a meeting that they're not sure, you know, maybe it's going to be controversial, or maybe they think in their head, oh, this is a stupid idea. But if you as a leader create an environment where it's okay to say anything, because you're not going to be judged. And just because you say something that didn't work or maybe didn't make sense, I'm not going to look at you and go, man, I made a mistake with that person. You just allow people to be them. They will flourish, and they will become the best versions of themselves, which will then lead to the team being more successful.
Amen to that. I mean, I think everything in business is an experiment anyway. So we're just contributing to experiments. So what is the vision for Yoga 6? What can we look forward to and seeing in the future?
Well, the vision is to have a studio in your town. And I'm not kidding, right? Like, so our goal is to bring yoga to everybody. And that means that we're going to have yoga studio, yoga sixes across the country. We really, if you take, you break down the United States, we probably should have about 1200 locations. So the goal is to do that, is to get studios in every little town that there is and get more people taking yoga.
Exciting. And tell us how people can learn more about Yoga 6.
Well, we are on all the different social media platforms. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and YouTube. And it's just under Yoga Six. And it's you spell out the word yoga and then spell out the word six, and it's one word. And then if you want to follow me on just my personal Instagram, it's Lindsay Junk.
And it's S-A-Y.
S-A-Y, that is right.
Thank you so much for being with me today. It's been lovely talking to you. And because of you, I signed up for a yoga workshop to remind me to do more yoga. So thank you for that.
Awesome. Thank you. This has been really fun talking to you.
Great. Thank you. And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success, one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeaderCircle.com.